And now we go from one extreme to the other as we leave the underwater realm and travel into outer space.
3, 2, 1, 0, 0,
and liftoff!
Getting objects like satellites into orbit's relatively easy these days, but living things can be a different matter. For instance, what happens to the hearts and blood vessels of the people who go there? That's what University of Texas researcher Ben Levine has devoted his career to finding out.
Turns out that it was one of the big surprises in the early space years that when astronauts came back down to Earth and tried to stand up, they couldn't. They'd faint. It's important because many people faint on Earth. In fact, 1 or 2% of all emergency room visits are because of fainting. So understanding what the effect of gravity is on fainting was really important clinically on Earth and very important for the astronauts. And as we've extended the human presence in space onto the International Space Station, we become more interested in long-duration spaceflight. And that's important as you think about what the future of space medicine, or really space science, is. The ultimate goal is to get to Mars. That's a long trip. And so understanding what happens to the human body over long-duration spaceflight has been our focus for the past 10 years or so.
What have you learned?
So there are many things that cause fainting. The most common is what we call neurally mediated fainting. That's fainting that happens when someone stands up and gravity sucks blood into your feet. And so you have to constrict the blood vessels. Think about it like putting your thumb over the edge of a hose to squirt the blood back up to your head. And then you also have to speed the heart rate. If you want to pump more, you just got to pump it faster. And it turns out that there are sensors located just at the base of your brain, which tells your body, oh no, not enough blood getting to the brain. Let's speed up the heart, constrict those blood vessels, and deal with all that blood. Now, sometimes the body's just overwhelmed. And we see that, for example, in a soldier who's very hot and tries to stand at attention, or someone who's become compromised because they've lost a lot of blood. Even the best of reflexes can't handle that.
But that doesn't explain what's going on in the astronaut, because they ought to have a normal volume of blood, shouldn't they? So why should, when they stand up, they get this drop?
Well, that's a wonderful question. And in fact, nobody faints in space, just like nobody faints when they're lying down in bed, except under unusual circumstances. But when astronauts go into space, all the blood that's normally in the lower part of our body rushes up into the chest. It's so dramatic, the astronauts call that the puffy face bird leg syndrome. The legs get skinny and the face gets puffy. But just like you and I, when you lie down at night, the body doesn't like all that fluid in the upper body, so it gets rid of it. That's why the first thing you have to do when you get up in the morning is go to the toilet, right? You get rid of that fluid.
So you've shunted a lot of fluid centrally. This is detected, and the body interprets that as I must have too much fluid, so it throws it away. And the astronauts don't have too much fluid, but the body thinks they do. They throw the excess away, so they've actually got too little circulating volume.
Right. Now, it's enough circulating volume in space. It only becomes too little when they stand up on Earth, as if they've lost a pint or 2 pints of blood.
So you put the volume back into your astronaut back on Earth. They've got the right level of blood now, but does the symptom resolve?
After the volume has been restored, they quickly return back to normal function. The most frequent time that an astronaut might faint is when they first come down. And by 2 or 3 days afterwards, most of that is back to normal. For longer duration flight, it may be more severe, and that's because the heart actually gets smaller. We call it the couch potatoes heart. If you don't do anything to prevent this from happening, the heart will shrink its muscle mass by about 1% a week.
We often see pictures sent down from space of astronauts exercising religiously. If you put them on an exercise regime, can you prevent those losses?
Fortunately, you can, and the astronauts do a pretty good job. Most of them may exercise up to 2 hours a day in space, primarily to protect their bones and their skeletal muscle. But exercise works for all the body, and it protects the heart as well. And there's much less fainting now than there was in the early days of the space program.
What about things like heart disease? We know that when we expose people to doses of radiation for things like cancer treatment, it does have a bad effect on blood vessels. there is more radiation exposure from cosmic rays in space, does that accelerate the risk of heart disease?
Well, that's one of our biggest concerns. Once you're outside the protective effect of the Earth's atmosphere, the radiation exposure is quite dramatic, particularly with solar flares and solar events. It can be extraordinary, and we worry about accelerating atherosclerosis. Right now, the best that we can do is to identify those individuals at highest risk and try to avoid flying them. So we've introduced coronary calcium scanning. Now, coronary calcium is a way of measuring the footprint of atherosclerosis in the blood vessels. You take a CAT scan and you measure the amount of calcium, which signifies that the atherosclerotic process has progressed. So most of the astronauts have a coronary calcium score of zero. There are some legacy astronauts, though, who have been in the program before this election who have a fair amount of atherosclerosis. So figuring out ways to protect them from radiation as they go outside the Van Allen belts will be critical, because they're middle-aged men and women. And what is it that kills middle-aged men and women? It's cardiovascular disease.
A lot of the prediction algorithms we have for when you go to your GP and they measure your blood pressure, they take your cholesterol level, they're good for older people. They always say they're notoriously noisy and bad for younger people. So how good is your NASA algorithm for looking at my coronary arteries and giving me a risk at my age, early 40s, of my risk of having a heart attack?
Well, that's a great question. You know, we were unhappy with the quality of the algorithms and that they weren't very good at identifying risk in younger people. So we've combined data from three major databases, some of which include a focus more on younger people, to look and to see how much better can we do if we include coronary calcium, and we do a lot better.
Really? So could this be extrapolated into wider clinical care then? So we can start using a measure made for astronauts down here on Earth?
I certainly hope so. We need to get it accepted by the wider clinical audience and published in the medical literature. And then I hope that we'll have an algorithm and an app that people can use in their GP's office.
A wonderful example of how investment in the space race has a spin-off benefit for those of us down here on Earth. I was talking with Ben Levine from the University of Texas.